Senator Hoffman, Senator Dyson, and Senator Stedman. I'm Senator Green. And of the committee, we've also been joined today by Senator Gary Stevens, who one of the many people in the building anxious to learn more about this. And we have a series of meetings and discussions planned for the rest of this week, and I think you've each been given a schedule that shows a very rigorous, vigorous plan for the rest of this week so that we can get through this and have our discussion led, have enough information so that everyone can formulate questions and ideas, and hopefully we'll have something to work with by Sunday. I have had three people sign up to testify, and we'll wait until after Senator Stedman has completed his presentation, and we'll have brief testimony at that time. The first of the discussions we're going to have from this point is to on the changing the contribution rate for existing employees. This has been a major conversation around, and Senator Stedman wants to start out with that. Are you ready to begin, Senator Stedman? I will say that we're waiting for the PowerPoint presentation to get online, but before that time, and until it gets on, we will follow from the printed information you can find. If you don't have this, it's back there on a table. And then for those on TV, we'll attempt the very soonest to get it on screen so you too can enjoy the benefit of the PowerPoint presentation. And so, Senator Stedman, with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I relocated so I could see the screen. We thought today would be nice when we go through this topic of employee and employer contributions that we had it up on a screen for the televised audience, because there's a lot of information concerning this issue, misinformation, out in the public. In fact, it's to the point where it's running rampant. So hopefully today we'll go through this and it'll clear up some of those issues. What we're going to do is talk about the contribution rates for the existing employees. There's two major categories. The first one we're going to talk about is the normal cost rate, and what that is. Each year, the actuary computes a normal cost rate for the next contribution year, and the normal cost rate is simply the percentage of payroll required to pay the benefits expected to be earned by all members during the coming contribution year. The process runs two fiscal years in advance. For example, the 07 normal cost rate was estimated this month by the state's actuary. So we've got a table here that shows a normal cost rate for the PERS. The medical cost component is 8.86% of payroll, and the pension component is 11.27. And TERS is on the right. The numbers are a little different. But the normal cost rate for PERS is 20.13%. So what that is saying is that 20.13% of your payroll goes to cover the benefits of the medical and pension component for the employees, what they're earning today. The contribution rate setting process, as long as the economic and demographic and financial projections all hold correct, which they won't, the normal cost rate would take care of the funding for the plan. Unfortunately, as we all know, you know, the demographics change, the economy goes in cycles, and financial projections are just that, financial projections, because they're geared into the economy. If you contribute too much, you end up with an overfunded plan. And if you contribute too little, you end up with an underfunded plan. And currently, we're dealing with an underfunded situation. To deal with your underfunded situation, the actuary will analyze the unfunded amount over 25 years, and this is computed as the past service cost. And the most important point, I think, today that we want to people to go home with, is there's a substantial difference between the normal cost rate, which is the cost rate for the employee today for the benefits being accumulated, and the past service rate, which is the rate that is used to fund benefits that were accrued a year ago or 5 years ago or a decade or 2 decades ago. And the past service rate is traditionally represented as a percent of payroll. All right. So they're both in percentage terms. So what we did is we made a table, and we've got the normal cost rate at the top, and that's the 20.13. TERS is 22.44. So I'll just go down the PERS column because the concept's the same over on the TERS, just the numerics are a little different. So the cost of today's benefits being accumulated for the employees working today is 20.13. The employee currently contributes 6.8, and this is an average, and we've got some footnotes on the bottom, 6.81%. So you subtract that out, then the employer, his normal cost is 13.3% of payroll is what the employer would pay for today's benefits. Well, we also have to deal with the funding, underfunding issue, that's the 5.7 billion underfunding number that's actuarially computed. And to pay that, there's a past service cost assigned to it, and that's 14.8. And we're going to get into that a little bit more here in a minute. So the employer not only has to pay for the current benefits being accumulated by the employees, which is the 13.3, but he also has to pay and is obligated to fund all of the benefits that were accumulated previously. And that totals out at 28.19% for the employer contributions and for PERS, and 41.78 for TERS. One thing I'd like you to notice is the past service rate is larger in both PERS and TERS than the normal cost. So if we were to make the contributions at the actuarial computed rate, we'd be paying more for the benefits that were accumulated last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Anybody still alive that's worked in the system, both retired and non-retired, than we are paying for the benefits of the people working today, accumulating benefits today. So our biggest challenge is going to be to deal with history.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Bundy has a question.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt. But on the PERS, the normal cost rate and the past service rate are both, in one case substantially and somewhat in another somewhat higher than the PERS. Is this just an economy of scale, or why? Why does it cost more to run one group than the other?
We're going to get into that in a little while. There's differences between the two. There's different benefit structures, and there's also different contribution amounts.
Okay, thank you.
So there's a table that'll come. Good way. Right, and the employee contribution rate is set in statute, and I think that's an important point to make here, that 6.81% and also the 8.68. So any increase in the normal cost rate is borne entirely by the employer. So as that normal cost rate currently at 20.13 in PERS moves up and down, that's a direct impact on the employer one way or the other. The bottom rate, the total employer contributions, these are the actuarial recommended rates. Currently, the PERS and TERS board may adopt different rates, and there's a 5% escalating cap on the rates, and the rates that they're going to adopt are going to be substantially lower than this because of that cap and the rate of escalation of these rates. when the board adopts a lower rate than the actuarial recommended rate, all else being equal, the liability is going to expand. Senate Bill 41 addresses these weaknesses, sets employee contribution rate to the greater of the current statutory rate or one half of the normal cost rate. And there's been a language change here, but with the provisions that the increase may not exceed 50 basis points annually. Currently, SB 141 language sets the maximum annual increase at 5%, but we are now proposing that it be reduced to 50 basis points. That 5% maximum, quite frankly, is a misprint. So anyway, we're looking at least the proposal on the table is to look at a 50 basis points, or one half of 1% change per year to the normal service cost. And again, this is not anything to do with the past service cost, but the normal service cost, which will eventually bring the normal service rate split between halfway between the employer and the employee. So it requires that the Alaska Retirement Management Board, which would be the new board created to handle the retirement system, to adopt a contribution rate that is no less than the actuarial computed employer normal cost rate. So there's language in there that says that the rate can never be less than the normal cost rate. What we have here is a chart that shows since 1983, TERS and PERS contribution rates for the with a projection from 07 forward, and projections are just that, projections. But what I want you to remember looking at this is that these rates change from year to year. They both go up and down. There's some volatility with them, and we've got some volatility numerics there. Currently, the employers are paying the majority of the normal cost rate, and they've done that for years. The normal cost for PERS again, is 20.13. The employee cost is 6.8. So the employer is 13. The employer is 66% of the burden. The employee is 33.8. Over on the TERS side, the employees are 38.7% of it, and the employer 61. The discussion I think that we should have at this table is, should we leave the current rate in place and leave these percentages intact, where the employer bears all of the costs for any future increase in the cost of health care going forward, or should this rate be floated where the employer and the employees split the normal service cost rate? And what we're proposing is a 50-50 split, and that is something certainly open for debate. Currently at 66-33 or 61-38. What we've done with this chart is we went back in time and we looked at, you know, has the employee contribution rate been changed? And the answer to that is yes. And again, it's very important that the normal cost rate change would not be to go to the past service cost. What we're dealing with here is strictly the cost of the benefits that are being accrued today. Anyway, on the bottom we have a similar table for TERS.
Senator Bundy?
And I thank you. I'm sorry to get interrupted again, but I think I'd like you to put a little brighter light or finer point on that. Just today I received this NEA activist. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a distortion due to a lack of knowledge or an intentional distortion. But the a column by the president says in item one, we are proposing this legislation we discuss would take money from all current employees' checks to help pay off the multi-billion-dollar shortfall. Now, I heard you say that no employee contribution would go into past service rate. It's only the current service rate. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So this is either an unintentional or intentional distortion?
Definitely, it's inaccurate information. I can't speak to the intent of it, but it's definitely...
Well, as long as I've got you stopped, there's another item here, there, item three. This legislation or other legislation like it would reduce school district contributions far below current levels.
That's also a distorted, inaccurate piece of information.
I just expect more from legislators. Maybe I just have these high hopes.
And let me tell you why we can't do that. Article 12, Section 7 of the Constitution. Retirement system. Membership in employee retirement systems of the state or its political subdivision shall constitute a contractual relationship. Accrued benefits of these systems shall not be diminished or impaired. Accrued benefits. Is a cost of benefits expected to be earned during the coming contribution year. What we're talking about modifying is a cost of the benefits from today going forward, not the accrued benefits of yesterday going back. And we contend that employees' contributions applied toward the normal cost rate are not part of the accrued benefit to which members are entitled. An accrued benefit is one that has already been earned and not one that has yet to be earned. Benefit rights accrue as they are earned year by year. Employee contributions cannot be charged retroactively to pay for the past benefits, past service cost, or any unfunded liability, but they can be changed prospectively to pay for the future benefits. And that's extremely important as we deal not only with this restructuring, but also when we get into how we're going to take care of the last time we met, the $5 billion problem, and now it's 5.7 with the one-year update on the numbers on the unfunded liability. And that includes the state, political subdivisions, and the schools, the 5.7 billion. What we've done here is we set up a table and we put down the first column is of course, the years as they go by. The second column is the normal cost rate that the actuary is projecting. Currently, it's 20.05. The employee is at 6.8, so the share is rounded off at 34% to the employee and 66% to the employer. And we wanted to know, well, what happens when we move towards that 50-50 split where we share the cost of the normal cost? Half of that would be 10.03. I'm reading off the top row of the year 2006. Under Senate Bill 141, the employee rate would then move to 7.33%, and that share would go to 36. And every year would bump up 0.5% until such time as after the fifth year, the last one would be about a 43 basis points or 0.43 of 1% increase to get to 50-50. Now, if the rate was to change at 1% a year, you would get there quicker or 0.75%. And that's something that I think we need to discuss, like I mentioned earlier, at this table. And then if in the future, which under the projections now would be in 2012 where that black line is drawn horizontally across and the first red number shows up, the normal service cost decreases, then the contribution rate for both the employer and the employee would decline. The 50-50 split would stay intact. So the forecast is for that rate to just kind of bounce around in small percentages. The biggest change is going to be to get there. Then we went in and we wanted to know, well, what's the impact? And I apologize for the difficulty of reading this slide on the screen because there's a lot of information on it. But the yellowed bar is this page concerns PERS members. There's also five other ranges or employee payroll levels showing the impact on different different salary levels. So if we just go and we'll look at the average for the presentation, currently they're paying every 2 weeks, they get a check for $1,825, but the contribution rate is $123. And I'm going to forget about the pennies in the conversation here, but it's 123. Under this proposal, it would go up $9 every 2 weeks, and they'd be paying $132 the first year. The second year, it would go up another $9, and it would go up to $141 every 2 weeks. And then finally, it would get out to where it's a 50-50 split, and they'd be paying $183 every 2 weeks. And I think one of the issues that we need to realize, at least in my opinion, if we look at a benefit change like this, with the collective bargaining system in place, we could expect the collective bargaining units to come back around when their contracts renew and bargain back some of this change. I would just expect that to happen. If it does, I don't know, but I would expect it to. But the impact that we're looking at on a small 0.5% change per year, we're trying to make it where an employee can ease into these changes in case some of them are extremely tight physically at their households. All right. And then I also want to mention that when we did these numbers, we did not do it after tax. So if we calculated these numbers after tax, instead of a $9 change, it'd be about a $7.50 change. So these are, we did not go into the macerations of after tax. So these are actually overstated. I figured it'd be. And then with a 50 basis point change, it's pretty easy. No, you can hold it there. It's pretty easy to move up to a full 1%. We just double it. This is similar, except it deals with TERS. TERS would be there in 2.5 years, 5 years. They'd be at the 50-50 split, it going up at 50 basis points. And that 50 basis points or 0.5% change is a subjective number. The next slide, slide 15, just shows the average salary in yellow of a TERS member and the impact on them. Again, these are pre-tax, so you could basically just take 75% of the $11. In FY06, their contribution rate would go up from $195 every 2 weeks, $195. It would go up $11 to $206. And quite frankly, after they pay Uncle Sam, it's probably going to go up about $7.50 to $8.
Senator Bundy.
Most teachers are paid monthly, though. Is this a bi-monthly or a monthly?
That's every 2 weeks, and we did that just so it's just set up the same as the PERS chart. Trying to keep things similar as people slide back and forth. With this chart here goes back to 1987 and it shows the funding ratio, which we've talked about before at this table, and it shows for PERS as we go across. It has the normal cost rate, and you can see from year by year as you go down, the normal cost rate changes. And then it has a past service cost. And again, those are the numbers that are substantially forecasted to climb in the future. And then you have the actuarial computed rate. And that is the rate the actuary computes to fund the plan. And then you have the rate that the board adopts in any difference. And you can see from 1987 through 1994, through 94, there was no change. There was column on the right is zero. Then you have a year where it's negative 3.9. What that's showing is that the board adopted rate was below the normal cost rate. The rate that year was below the cost of paying for the benefits that particular year. And then that also occurred in 02 and 03. But I thought it'd be nice to have some history of these rates, because that debate, I'm sure, is going to come to the table. If we go over on the TERS side, you can see that the like the second year, 1988, the board adopted rate was 10.54. And I'm in, again in year 1998 on the TERS, and the normal cost rate was 11.86. We've put language in our plan, so the column on the left with the negatives would hopefully never have any negatives in it. You would have to charge a rate that equals your normal cost rate. And at some point in the future, maybe the fund becomes overfunded, and then they could come back to the legislature for a change, but we won't all be here. By the time that takes place, we're probably looking at 20 to 30 years out. The next chart, and there's two charts left, and they're both, one's PERS and one TERS. This chart here shows the payroll contribution trend and the forecast. And you can see the yellow bars is what the employee paid and is forecasted to pay under the current scenario. The darker blue line is a normal service cost, and then the light blue line is the past service cost or the unfunded liability. In the past, there has been some from year to year, and you can see the large one that we face today. TERS, on the other hand, the chart's the same, shows the employee cost along with the breakdown of the employer. A lot of the documentation that you see, for instance, in the actuarial studies from Mercer, talk about the employer rate. So it's really easy to forget about the employee rate and to add it on. But with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to go ahead and, I guess, right, let me point out that the scale, can you back up one mouse? Let's go to the y-axis. Historically, you know, the red lines bounced on roughly 15 to 20%. And then when you hit into 05, you know, there's an escalation. And it goes on up above 35% and heads up to 40. Not quite 40, but I don't know, maybe 37. Somewhere in there, out to 2027, 2028 or so. We can go to the next slide. If we look at the y-axis on the TERS chart, current calculated rate, if I remember right, is right under 42% under the new plan, I mean the new actuarial study. It's forecasted to climb up, go over 50, and then hit 60. The capital or the funds available to contribute to and pay for the light blue is monies that should not have to be redirected from goods and services and social needs and education needs today, because it's being diverted to pay for costs that were accrued last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So there's a huge substantial shift in our demand for our financial resources. And if we were to put dollar values on that, statewide, we're looking at about $500 million in about 4 years. So it's a huge sum of money, and the quicker we come to grips with it and deal with it, the better off the entire state's going to be.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see. Can we go back one slide to the yellow? The solid yellow is what the employee is paying today, and that is what Ms. Black brought her paycheck. That's the 6.75% on her paycheck the other day.
Right.
Okay, I understand that. The blue is what it costs for the employer, the state, to the government to fund the current obligations of the PERS system.
Correct.
The dotted blue is to make up for past shortfalls.
Correct.
Where does the Where does the increase in the contribution that's shown on slide 13, the $9 every 2 weeks, show up on that slide?
We didn't factor that in, that 50 cent change, excuse me, 50 basis points. We didn't make that slide. We didn't run a slide on the financial impact. It would move the yellow bar up, and it would shorten the dark blue bar, okay. And it would have no impact on the light blue bar.
Okay. So the blue bar, the gold bar, would just increase very slightly,
right,
over time.
Over time, until such time as it got up to the gold bar and the light blue bar would be equal lengths.
Would be equal. And that's, you're showing out how many years?
That goes out. Six, 7 years.
2011?
So does this go up like this?
Right.
So it would be equal out here?
Right.
And then it would be flat across there?
Correct. The dark blue, and we should add that in for the next, we'll make another slide. So it's clear that the total height of the yellow and the dark blue bar don't change. It's just the yellow bar would go up to equal or half the height of the dark blue bar.
But the net impact, by that contribution, doesn't bring down the red line.
No. The red line, again, the underfunded liability, and let me just touch on this again, under Senate Bill 141 does not address recapitalizing the unfunded liability, which is now at $5.7 billion. The hope here is that Senate Bill 141 becomes law or something similar to it, and the new board is put together and directed to come back to the legislature with options and recommendations on dealing with the $5.7 billion underfunding and to review all reasonable options that they have. They would include paying the liability off in the entirety. These are just some of the options. You can pay it off in the entirety. You could ignore it and run the system out of cash and end up with a huge, huge liability out 15, 20 years. You could lower the contribution amount and the targeted funding rate and just let a liability lay out in front of you for a substantial amount of years. You know, you can do pension bonds, which is a financial instrument, where you borrow money from the financial market and reinvest it and try to make more money on it than it cost you. That is not a riskless situation. You know, there's all kinds of options out there. Those are just a few, but the unfunded pension liability of 5.7, which is the past service cost, is a totally separate issue than the normal service cost. And that's what I think the discussion today should take place on, is should we roughly leave the percentage splits the way they are, or should we, between the employer and the employee, or should we move to, you know, a 50-50 ratio, or a, you know, 55-45, or some other number. Clearly the cost of health care today in the American society is substantially more than it was 10 years and 20 years ago. And I think periodically these numbers should be reviewed.
Senator Wilkin.
And a follow-up to that. So how much is the, when that reaches the 10% line in 2011, how much is, what's the displacement of general fund dollars? How much is it worth to put in place your table on page 15.
It's not.
What's the value, I guess, of that change?
I think think you mean page 14. You
guys, this is current, but turn to the PERS. It would be
13%. What's the value of that change?
It would be three, and I don't, I'll have to dig them out and get to you, but it would be 3.32% of the entire payroll.
Which is how much?
Well, I think I don't have that. I don't have the current chart with me. Let me see if I've got it in my phone.
That's okay. We don't need it now. Just some time.
My sources are telling me 2.2 billion.
Well, pardon me, Mr. Madam Chairman?
My sources are telling me 2.2 billion. They've done some calculations back here.
Just PERS? So it'd be 3.2% of that.
Well, maybe we can nail that down. It'd be interesting to see what that means in displaced general fund requirement. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, let's see. First, I have Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On your past service rate, you have substantially, I'm looking at page 5, the 14.87 for PERS and 28.02 for TERS to recap the $5.7 billion. Over time, is that percentage fixed? Those percentages are fixed until paid off? And the other question is, in looking at your schedules on page 17 and 18, I see it substantially declining in year 2028. When is that going to be paid off? Shortly after 2031? And then that rate would then be eliminated from the state's contribution?
Let me back up a little bit. On your first question is, does the past service cost fluctuate year to year? Answer to that is yes. If you have the 14.87 is recalculated every year. If you have substantial gains in your portfolio and things are going very well, that's going to shorten the or shallow the unfunded liability side. If you have a year or several years where you have performance issues or performance of your portfolio less than the targeted 8.25, it's going to expand it. Mathematically, what they do is they take any gain over 8.25% on the portfolio and average it out over 5 years and phase it in and any loss. So that leads back to that slide 17 when you're asking what happens out in 2028, 2029 when the red line declines. Will we ever get to zero on the unfunded liability? I hope so. I think what will end up happening next year is that substantial drop at the left-hand or the right-hand side of the slide is going to move a year out.
And then,
let me just add one other thing. So theoretically, yes, the unfunded liability could go to zero, and then in that case, the past service rate would be zero.
And what is the distribution of the $5.7 billion between PERS and TERS?
I'd have to break it down for you.
So it's conceivable that...
You think it's 3.2 for TERS? PERS, excuse me.
So it's conceivable that sometime in the future, one would be paid off and there would still be an obligation for the other?
Correct. They're not going to be identical. I would assume I think the likelihood of them being identical are near zero. And also within PERS, there's police and fire, which is a little different.
Just so what?
Police and fire.
Oh, police and fire.
Police and fire, they use a, and then they've got basically all others in their analysis, and then so they use what they call a blended rate. And what we're using in our presentation here is more of the blended rate. And then, you could even compartmentize it more on the municipality side where it goes down to each municipality's liability is a little different, and their structure's a little different. There's actually one entity within the PERS system in Senate District A that's actually overfunded.
And of the $5.7 billion, how much of that is directly related to state, the state's obligation?
I'd have to subtract that out. We didn't break it down today for this, because today's concentration is not really on the unfunded liability, but we can break that out. We've got all that data. In fact, the unfunded liability breakdown goes all the way down to the community level.
I guess my question is, if we have, regardless of the markets, the obligation today is a finite amount, $5.7 billion. For budgetary purposes, why wouldn't we, and we know that debt, why wouldn't we have a fixed rate over time? To pay off the $5.7 billion obligation.
You could. What they do is they amortize that out over 25 years at 8.25%. But every year as you go along, you're either going to have a good year or a bad year, so it keeps, you know, the target keeps moving on you a little bit. But that currently it is amortized at 25 years at 8.25%, so they do calculate that.
Well, it's moving anyway, because right, you said that we can't pinpoint the exact time that it's going to be paid off as it is.
Correct, because we don't know what the future returns on the portfolio are going to be, or the future normal cost issues, and also all the assumptions that the actuary uses. What's that? Yeah, and they recalculate that past service costs or the unfunded liability, and then they re-amortize it. And currently what's going on is there's a 5% limit on what they can raise the employer contribution at the municipality and school system level, which is substantially below the actuarial rate. So we can expect our liabilities to expand. A year from now, we'll be sitting in, it should be somewhere at 6.1, 6.2 billion. 6.1, 6.2.
Sarah. Going back to your other question, I guess, since we came here, this is all in front of us primarily because of the $5.7 billion, and that is going to be addressed, but when we are talking about changing from a defined benefits to defined contribution, we're also, your question is, should we change the way the whole system works? Should the employee, at the same time we're looking at trying to fill the hole of the $5.7 billion, should we as a state reduce our obligation to the employees, and should we increase our obligation, the employee's obligation? You know, it seems as though why are we asking that when our main thrust of this whole legislation has been to try to stabilize the whole system and try to address the $5.7 billion? Well, I think why is that question in front of us?
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head. The idea here is to stabilize the system we have first, and to reconstitute the boards, and to get a better interrelationship between the liabilities and the assets. So we're doing.
But looking at the graph in front of us, you know, in 2005 on, the rate is staying right at 20%. And when we move back with your proposal at a half a point, that would make the yellow line and the blue line equal. And basically that, by doing that, that's decreasing the state's obligation and increasing the employee's obligation. The same question that Senator Bundy had alluded to earlier, you know, are you going to be digging into our pockets? You know, and that, if we take that, you know, even if we go 60-40, or whatever, if we change from that, then the same question that Senator Bundy and Senator Wilken had said, we will be digging into the employee's paycheck.
Well, there's no doubt about it, Senator Hoffman. If you take the normal service cost and you split it 50-50, the contribution amount from the employee will go up. I think the magnitude is fairly small, and the impact, the way we propose it. I also personally believe that when these rates were structured, there was a substantially different cost level of health care in the United States. And as we go forward, the cost of health care will most likely continue to escalate. And I don't think it's a bad policy to periodically review the contribution ratio between the employer and the employee for the ongoing cost of the benefit structure.
Senator.
But your comment isn't reflected by looking at the chart here. From the retirement and for the employee, in retirement and for health benefits being paid out, your percentage stays at 20%. So, you know, what I've heard you say is that the yellow line would go up and the blue line would come down, whereby each one of those would be approximately 10% equally. But I don't, if we said that health care was going to be going up, then the total of those percentages would be rising from 2005 through the end of the chart for 2032.
Well, that's kind of a little distortion. If you look at from roughly 2005 on, that's a forecast, and the blue line, look at just the top of the blue line, you're referring roughly to 20%, it's fairly flat. And if we go back into history from, you know, the mid-80s on up till today, you can see that you might as well look at the red line because it's pretty much on top. You know, there's a lot more volatility, and I would expect the volatility to be something similar in the future as it was in the past, in that linear relationship not to hold because it's a projection. In other words, what this chart shows is not the proposed 50 basis point increase. This chart shows what is currently in place. So there, you know, we could certainly, and we will do another chart to take, you know, bump the yellow line up a little bit, you know, so it's halfway to the height of the blue line, you know, to reflect the proposed increase from the employee contribution. But it's not going to change the volatility going forward of the normal cost rate. It's just, you know, the issue is, you know, do we want to freeze the employee where they're at, or do we want to float it with market conditions?
Go ahead, sir.
I guess from my position, I guess my position would be to freeze it as where it's at, going along the same lines that Senator Bundy and Senator Wilken said. Their paycheck is going to stay the same. Their contribute. Our purpose here is to try to stabilize the system and try to address the light blue hole, which is the $5.7 billion. Problem, and not try to change the rest of the game, so to speak. You know, and I think that has been the dialogue from the members, and people can correct me, members can correct me, but that's been the dialogue that I've been hearing at this table.
Senator Bundy.
Could I correct him? It's a philosophical call, but I think that we have the choice of continuing what we're doing now, and the majority of Alaskans pay the majority of the fixed costs, or we can ask the beneficiaries, the potential retirees, to pay half and the rest of the state pay half. But that dark blue line indicates to me money that belongs to all Alaskans, and every dollar that's in that dark blue line is a dollar that Alaskans who are not state employees can't use for, so as you mentioned earlier, important public services. So, you know, we're If we don't change, there's that philosophical discussion, and then if we don't change, am I incorrect in assuming that there's also a possibility that that red line could take off and continue to go up? If we continue, it seems to me if you continue to do what you've been doing, you're going to continue to get what you've been getting. So if we don't make a substantial change, there's at least a possibility that red line could continue to grow. And the unfunded mandate, not be $5.5 billion, but several billion more.
Right. As the employer increases their contribution amount heading towards that, under the blended PERS at 28%, as they head that direction, it's going to take them a few years to get there, and our liability is going to expand.
Madam Chair, for that, even if we don't make a substantial change to the system, our unfunded mandate will continue to go up temporarily.
Right, just the timing of how long it takes to get things done and reconstitute things. I'd say the probability is extremely high that a year from now we're going to have liabilities in excess of $6 billion. And are we going to be at 6.1 or 6.2? We've got three quarters of the fiscal year already behind us. So the portfolio numbers at ASBIB, are three quarters through for the entire year. So we've got a